Fatherless Fanny by Anonymous. Chapter 6. Correspondence. When the first emotions of Lady Ellencourt's sorrow had subsided, she sat down to write to her daughter. Her letter contained a gentle reprimand for not immediately informing her of the mournful situation of her beloved niece, and requested her never to spare her feelings in future at the expense of her humanity. "I know," added she, "that I am a poor powerless creature as to anything I can do, but my mind suggests a measure which may perhaps be adverted to with success. Cannot you, my dear Caroline, find some generously disinterested person who could be persuaded to write to Lord Summertown and state the actual condition of his niece? I have been told he is very fond of her, and I think if he knew how she is treated, he would find some means to redress her wrongs. The notice must not come from our family, or how readily would I fly to acquaint him with her peril? For my anxiety for my poor Emily would supersede every feeling of resentment in my bosom, and force me to act in concert with my bitterest enemy, so that her welfare appeared likely to result from such a coalition. I understand that Lord Summertown resides constantly now at his seat in Yorkshire, a prey to the most profound melancholy. I fear there is but too much cause for such a disposition. Reflection, to a mind like his, must be exquisite torture. Surely he would be glad of something to rouse him from the torpor of despair, and force him to exert all the energy he possesses in behalf of his suffering niece." In answer to this letter, Lady Ellencourt received the following from her daughter. "The object of your solicitude, my dearest mother, is no longer an inhabitant of this cruel world. Lady Baliffin had been dead a fortnight when your letter reached me. I wonder you have not seen it announced in the English papers. Innumerable reports are spread about here concerning this event. Many people assert that her ladyship met an untimely death by poison administered to her by her cruel lord. Of this number, Mrs. Flynn, my maid, is the most devout believer, for she has seen people there who have seen Lady Baliffin's ghost all in white upon the crag of the rock, where her lover appeared some time ago."
"And what, my lady, could take her ladyship's ghost there, you know, if she had come fairly by her death?"
"This is Flynn's creed, and the whole bench of bishops could not turn her from it, were they to try. Other people assert that Lady B has made her escape to England, and that it was only a log of wood that was so pompously interred a few days ago, and that my lord's reason for choosing to believe her dead is because he intends marrying the woman whom he has kept for so long, and make her as good as a great many more ladies who wear coronets and came by them in the same manner. But for my part, I must confess that I am a convert to neither opinion, for I think it extremely natural that a person of a delicate frame like Lady Baliffin should sink under the pressure of ill-treatment and confinement, particularly as she had not one sympathizing bosom to whom she could impart her sorrows. I only wonder why she lived so long. I hope my dear mother's excellent sense will suggest the best consolation to her. The death of Lady Baliffin is the emancipation of a wretched slave, and ought to be hailed with joy instead of lamentation. That she was innocent, I don't entertain a doubt, and in that case, what an exchange is hers! Sinking as she was beneath accumulated sorrow and distress, both of body and mind, she is now translated to the fullness of glory and happiness forevermore." Lady Ellencourt's mind was relieved from the tortures of suspense and anxiety by the mournful news conveyed to her in her daughter's letter, and her agitated feelings gradually sunk into the calm of settled melancholy. The last vestige of her beloved brother was now extinct, and his name forever blotted out. The sweet offspring of that unhappy marriage had terminated her youthful career in a manner no less wretched than her parents had done before her. But she could now suffer no more, and, fear subsided with hope in the heart of Lady Elincourt. Lord Elincourt beheld with real concern the havoc grief was making on the delicate frame of his indulgent mother, and he used his utmost endeavor to divert her melancholy. The society of the engaging Fanny seemed to promise the best antidote to the gloom that was creeping over her. Lord Elincourt entreated his mother, therefore, to take the child from school, and by making her the constant inmate of the house, ensure to herself the comfort of a companion whose intrusions on her privacy would be optional. Lady Elincourt approved of the scheme, and Fanny was installed in her new abode before another week had elapsed, to the almost uncontrollable joy of the lively girl, who thought she could never sufficiently express her gratitude to her dear, dear mamma, as she now styled Lady Elincourt, for a favor as delightful as unlooked for. That Fanny might be no loser by the removal, Lady Elincourt determined to engage an accomplished governess to complete the education of her darling under her roof. Miss Bridewell, who just at that period was wishing to get rid of her dear Dawson, recommended that lady as the fittest person she knew to fill up the important station. Lady Elincourt approved the measure, and Mrs. Dawson became the gouvernante of fatherless Fanny, assuming as much importance upon the occasion as if she had been appointed to the tuition of the first princess in the known world. It is necessary in this place to mention that soon after the Lady Trenthams left school, the amiable Lady Maria became the wife of the far from amiable Colonel Ross, whose pleasing exterior had beguiled her of her heart before she was aware that she had one, and whose large fortune and high family rendered him agreeable to the Marquis of Petersfield as a son-in-law, particularly as there appeared to be a fair chance of the family title and estate of Ballafin centering in that gentleman, as his brother had been married many years without having an heir. And the rumors that had reached the Marquis respecting Lady Ballafin's supposed infidelity rendered it probable his lordship would never marry again. During the ensuing 5 years of Fanny's life, little occurred to vary the scene. She was the cherished companion of her kind benefactress and the still undiminished favorite of Lord Elincourt, who, though he continued his giddy career through the mazes of fashion, never abated aught of his kindness toward his adopted child. Mrs. Dawson had now completed the education of her pupil, and the recommendation of Lady Elincourt obtained for that lady a similar situation in the family of a lady who resided a part of the year in Ireland. Mrs. Dawson, it has before been observed, was of a disposition exactly calculated to make her way in the world. She well knew how to catch the whim of the moment and to humor it with the most consummate skill. She was always, therefore, a great favorite with her employers. Lady Elincourt, who was one of the best women in the world, thought Mrs. Dawson the epitome of perfection, for to her observation she had appeared as pious as she was accomplished, and in the latter point there was no deception. Mrs. Dawson was certainly full capable of that task she had undertaken, as far as elegant attainments extended. But poor Fanny would have imbibed but little of the true spirit of piety from her governess, had it not been for the genuine lessons bestowed upon her by her affectionate friend, Lady Elincourt, and the firm foundation that had been laid by the amiable Emily Barlow during the infant years of the interesting orphan. Mrs. Dawson had found the secret, however, of winning Fanny's affection, whose artless bosom, as incapable of suspicion as of deceit, judged everybody of the pure model of her own heart. Every secret of her soul had been reposed in Mrs. Dawson's keeping, and she had not a thought she wished to conceal from the person she had so long considered in the light of a second self. To part with this tenderly beloved friend was therefore a most painful trial for the affectionate girl, and Mrs. Dawson took care the impression should not be softened by any of the attentions Lady Elincourt bestowed upon her favorite, by way of amusing her thoughts and diverting them from the object of her regret. Fanny's grief, which had been continually increased by the artful suggestions of Mrs. Dawson, appeared beyond the control of reason when the final separation took place, and to mitigate its violence, Lady Ellencourt consented to an arrangement which had not her entire approbation, namely, the establishing of a regular correspondence between the pupil and her ci-devant governess when at a distance from each other. This was exactly the object Mrs. Dawson had in view all the time, and the attainment of her wishes promised to gratify the true ruling passions of her mind, curiosity and selfish policy. She well knew that by Fanny's letters she could obtain the knowledge of every material occurrence in Lady Ellencourt's family, and over and above the satisfaction of acquiring that knowledge to her naturally curious mind, she might be able, through her skill in maneuvering, to turn some of them to her own advantage. Things being thus arranged in her own mind, Mrs. Dawson took her leave with every exterior appearance of the deepest regret. Although her heart secretly rejoiced in the change, as her salary was considerably augmented by the event, and she went away laden with marks of Lady Ellencourt's munificence, besides all the valuable trinkets she had obtained from the simple Fanny, by loving them for the sake of the dear, dear wearer. End of chapter 6.